From the makers of Hubley Horror House, Triple H Media presents a new story.
What the hell? I'm no scientist, but even I know that's not a good sign.
Taken from his world and forced to survive.
I didn't get your name.
Adam.
After the first created man. How ironic.
Forced to make alliances just to stay alive.
Get the damn gun and run! Now!
Come on, big guy. Show me where you're hurt, man. Wait, what's this?
New guy, move it!
What?
I'm saving your life. Move your ass.
Oh, yeah, right.
Surviving against creatures he has never seen before. But in the end, it comes down to man versus alien. Who will survive? A new podcast and beyond is coming soon. Are you ready?
Warning, this podcast may contain vulgar language, graphic violence, drug use, and sexual themes. Parental guidance is suggested.
The Evil Never Dies Podcast.
Past curfew. Why are you still up? Political and religious leaders that have shocked this city over the Hello? Last month Hello? Suddenly as they began. No Perhaps you need another shot. Responsibility for the slaying. But police have a suspect in custody under observation at state hospital. That should do it. Identity is held pending further investigation. Sports and weather. Next.
Sweet dreams, you bastard.
Hello? me, Father, for I have sinned.
Kill her. That's all you have to do.
Kill Mary.
She's a risk. And get the priest as well.
I've had enough and I want out!
You can't walk away now.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I'm Brett, here with Carl. What's up, man?
Hello. I was listening to Operation Mindcrime today.
Well, yeah. Really? Well,
how about that?
What do you know about that? That's the episode we're going to do.
I think that's a good discussion for the day.
Yep. Sounds good to me. Well, I guess we'll get started here. Concept album and a rock opera. You think it's a rock opera?
Well, let's do a little bit of backtracking here before we get to Mindcrime with Queens. I don't know if we're going to do an episode on Queensrÿche or not, but let's at least explore the how they got there. Because yeah. I remember the song, hearing the song Deliverance in like, you know, 84, 85. And I was like, man, this band is as badass than Take Hold of the Flame.
Yep, yep.
And I was like, man, these guys are good. And then they put out that album, Rage for Order or Rage for the Order or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, Rage for Order, yep.
Which didn't make any sense. Rage for the Order sounds better. But then I saw pictures of it, and I'm like, what the hell? You know, they were all got perms and were all had makeup on, and they were, and the album was just weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of over time, I've kind of grown on that album, but I was kind of like, yeah, they're not a very good band.
It was different from the first one for sure.
Yeah, and then the EP, of course.
Yeah, I like that.
With Queen of the Reich, the song on it.
Yeah.
They kind of went from a heavy metal band to a like progressive keyboard, whatever band. And then they came out with Mindcrime.
Yes.
They sort of went back to their roots, I would say.
Yep. And
that's definitely a heavy album compared to Rage for Order. or of the Order, or whoever the Order. Right. I'm not a fan of that album. It's kind of grown on me over time, but
yeah, I was listening to it the other day. I was like, wow,
such a change. Yeah, they did a detour along the line there with that. Maybe, just maybe, it was a hint of what was to come in the future, though. I don't know.
Possibly,
maybe they were just saying, hey, this is what's coming down the road, so be prepared.
All right. It was their third studio album. It was released on May 3rd of 1988. Then it was reissued in 2003, and it had two live songs on that from over at the Hammersmith Odeon.
Boy, I guess that's sort of a money grab. Just throw two live tracks and expect somebody to buy the CD again.
Well, then they they added the songs the Mission Live and My Empty Room Live, which we'll get into here more about shortly. And then they remastered it again in 2006.
I think I actually bought that remaster.
And then it had the whole live concert on it from.
Yes. Yes, it did.
There. Yeah.
So I've got that copy. I've got the original. I've got that remaster.
Yep. And it actually reached 50 in the Billboard Top 100 of that year. So pretty dang good, I think.
I'm actually for surprised.
For a metal album.
It didn't get a little bit further up the charts after they went on tour with Metallica.
And it went gold in 89 and then platinum in 91. All right, we're going to go through the band here. Got Jeff Tate on vocals, keyboards, whistles, and blurbs.
Yeah, he blurbed a lot.
Blurbed a lot.
Now, do note, this is the original band at this stage.
Yeah, this is the original band, yep. Chris DeGarmo on guitars.
And, a genius.
And Michael Wilton on guitar. They traded up lead and rhythm throughout the whole album.
Yeah, but DeGarmo was sort of the genius behind the madness to me.
Yeah, he's definitely a good guitar player. Eddie Jackson on bass. And Scott Rockenfield on drums, which I think he's actually a damn good drummer, too.
He is a good drummer, but I always wondered, is that his real name or is that a stage name? I mean,
Rockenfield,
it just sounds too perfect to be, you know.
Yeah. And then the cast in the album, Pamela Moore played Sister Mary. Anthony Valentine played Dr. X. Debbie Wheeler as the nurse. Mike Snyder as the anchorman.
Hey, wait a minute now. You know who Mike Snyder is, don't you?
Who's that?
He used to be the anchor for Channel 5 News here in Dallas-Fort Worth for many, many years.
Well, he's on the album.
I know he is. I knew that when I first heard the album, I was like, that's Mike Snyder.
Really?
And he's actually... has talked about that and is pretty proud of the fact that he performed on there.
Well,
even to
awesome.
This day, he actually works for Tarrant County now.
Glad you knew that. Glad you knew that little tidbit of info, because I sure did.
Mike Snyder from Channel 5 News.
Well, if it was if he wasn't on there in the last 10 years, then I wouldn't know him.
So. Yeah.
But anyway. Scott Mateer is Father William, and the Moronic Monks of the Moron Heights was the choir that played on the album.
Okay.
And the inspiration of the album, Jeff Tate, when he moved to Canada, he had friends that were in a militant group, the Quebec Separatist Movement.
Oh, yeah, I remember this now.
And some of them, the people he knew, were actually involved in did some bombings and some terrorism shit.
Yeah, they were anti-English speaking, I believe. Weren't they like a French, like pro-French or something to that effect?
Huh. I didn't get into that, but.
Yeah, I just remember hearing over the years Jeff Tate talking about that.
And he also was inspired by his friends that were drug addicts.
I'm sure there were a lot of those around in the 80s. Although I never knew Queensrÿche, the known as a drug band per se. They always seem like pretty clean-cut guys.
All right, now we're going to go through the story. The album's like just one big story is all it is.
Before we start, I'm going to say it's probably the best concept album in the heavy metal genre, period, to me. I mean, it'd be right up there with Seventh Son of a Seventh Son and Wasp, the Crimson Idol. Those three albums for metal, I'm not going back into the hell, you know, happened with Tommy or whatever. Screw that. I'm talking about metal, you know, modern metal. I don't know that Mind Crime is the best and if anybody's ever topped it.
Yeah, it's probably in my top 20 album metal albums of all time.
Yeah, but as far as concept albums, I think it would be in the top three, definitely. Well, I know it would be. There's no thinking about it. Probably in top 20 albums of all time, too. Yes. And again, we're just talking about hard rock and metal. I'm not. That's where, you know, we start about what with Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, and go forward. So we don't go any further back. I don't know about the Who and Tommy and all that shit.
Yeah. Well, I listened to it all, but not a big fan. I would have liked to seen them, but if, you know, back in the day, but.
Well, for purposes of our show, we'll just cut it off with Purple, Sabbath and Zeppelin.
Exactly.
They're the starting point. They're not the cutoff. They're the start point.
All right. I Remember Now is the first song on the album. Begins with Nicky. He's a drug addict, freaky guy, protagonist.
Well, there was always rumors he was named after Nicky Six. Just saying. No, I'm serious. I've heard that many times.
I was wondering that because it's spelt the same damn way.
Yes, it is.
Well, anyway, he's in the hospital and he can't remember anything but snippets of his past. And suddenly his memory returns and remembered how as a heroin addict and political radical and how he was frustrated with society and all of its bullshit and how he was manipulated. And then he joined a secret organization dedicated to starting a revolution.
Yep.
So that's the beginning of the where the nurse at the beginning of it. And you'll hear it at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah. But, it took you a while to edit that, you said.
Yeah, it did.
It was done. Y'all will hear that in the beginning. So yeah, it was done well.
The next song is Anarchy X/ Revolution Calling. The head of the organization is a political and religious demagogue known as Dr. X. And he manipulates Nicky with his heroin addiction and brainwashes him so he can become an assassin.
And write a book called The Heroin Diaries later on, I guess.
And when Dr. X uses the word mind crime, he can command Nicky to murder anyone he wishes, i.e. Operation Mind Crime.
Exactly.
All right. The next song is Speak. As his position.
I love that song, by the way. That's one of my favorite songs on the album.
As Nicky's position gets stronger and grows in the organization, basically his thoughts on Dr. X and his vision of the future. Yeah, that is a good song. That is one of my, definitely one of my favorites on there for sure.
Oh yeah, by far.
All right. Spreading the Disease.
That's another one of my favorite songs on the album.
I'm telling you, man, this whole album's awesome. Been listening to it, listened to this thing many times. So
it hasn't ever got old for me either. I still love it.
Spreading the Disease, through one of Dr. X's associates, who ends up being a corrupt priest named Father William. Nikki's offered the services of a 16-year-old prostitute turned nun. Sister Mary.
Yeah, $25 a fuck and John's a happy man. Yeah. One of the lyrics on there.
Yep. All right. The Mission. Through his friendship and affection with Mary, he begins to question what he's doing and with this being this assassin guy and everything. And seeing Dr. X basically has his own agenda. And all right. Sweet Sister Mary. Dr. X sees what's going on with Nikki and Mary and don't want to lose his assassin, you know, is basically his right-hand man or whatever. That's doing all of his dirty work for him. And so he orders him to kill both Mary and the priest. So
and there's one little part.
Huh?
That's where Nikki actually starts questioning him. So, kill Mary? You know, that's part of the part of it, of the story there.
And he says, yeah, and get the priest too.
Yep.
So he goes to the church and he kills the priest, but he can't kill Mary because he's basically he's fallen in love with her. Fallen in love with her, not fallen.
Is she still 16 at the time?
Well, I don't know how long. How long of a timeline this is, you know. I think it's in a pretty quick timeline.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
All right. The Needle Lies.
That's a true statement.
Nikki decides he's going to leave Dr. X's organization and take Mary with her. And he goes to tell Dr. X that we're fucking out of here, you know. But
that would seem to be a mistake. I think I would have just left.
Exactly. Why would you? Because, you know, he don't give a shit about him. He's just using his ass, you know.
I guess it furthers the storyline. So
yeah,
we gotta further the storyline.
So Dr. X tells him, you're just going to go back to being a fucking worthless drug addict and yada, yada. Electric Requiem. What the song? It's probably only, a minute and 20 seconds long.
Yeah, it's just a little short tidbit, more or less.
Yeah, that's when he goes back to the church and he finds Mary dead and he starts to go off the fucking deep end. Breaking the Silence. It's like he can't cope with reality with the loss of Mary. He don't know what the hell he's going to do. And the possibility that he may have killed her even, you know, because he was just out of it. And he just succumbs to insanity and starts running through the streets calling her name. All right. I Don't Believe in Love.
Yep, that was my theme song for a few years.
Oh, yeah?
In high school, we had a stupid newspaper, and you could dedicate songs, and I think we'd dedicate that song to nobody and pay 25 cents, and there'd be a whole line dedicated to nobody. Queensrÿche, I don't believe in love.
Oh, that's funny.
We just did it to piss everybody off. You'd think the school would have policed stuff better, but they did not.
All right. I don't believe in love. The police catch up with him and they find a gun on him and arrest him and charge him with the murder of Mary and all the other murders that he committed for Dr. X.
Yet another good song. Of course, it was one of the singles from the album as well.
Yeah. I forget what got up to, like, I don't know, 30 or something on the charts.
Yeah, it was
I think both of them did.
Big all on right. MTV.
Waiting for 22 and My Empty Room. These are Waiting for 22. It's a real quick instrumental too.
Yeah, just kind of intros in the end.
And that's so he gets put in the hospital, suffering from, you know, complete memory loss. You don't know where the fuck he's at, what the fuck's going on. Retraces his last moments with Mary. And then he starts remembering little tidbits here and there. And that brings
us home. Rosary wrapped around her throat.
Yep. So he's still freaking out. He don't know whether he killed her or not, or hoping he didn't.
Maybe Dr. X did. Maybe the priest did. Maybe she did. It's a big mystery at this stage. And they played that up for years.
Yep. We're going to come to that at the here
right
shortly.
Time.
Eyes of a Stranger, the final song on the album. Flashes back to present time, and he's in the hospital room, and back to the beginning of the story again. Now he totally regains his memory, and stares at himself in the mirror, unable to recognize who he is and what he was before. So that's the story of Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah, and just a note in there, Eyes of a Stranger to me is probably the best song Queensrÿche ever recorded, period. I mean, I know it was probably one of their, well, actually probably not their biggest hit after Empire came out, but I still think that song was just had everything in it. Great song. Still love it.
Yep. I like it a lot too. But like I said, man, I love that whole album, dude. I could listen to it once a week and it wouldn't bother me a bit, you know?
When was the first time you actually heard Mindcrime?
Well, I just got out of the Army and, a friend of mine in the Army, he was a big Queensrÿche fan already, and he had, you know, their two other albums in the demo before that, and he would always listen to it all the time, especially The Warning. He liked The Warning a lot. He was a big fan of that. He was always jamming on that, and he kept saying, man, because he was getting out the same time I was. We actually flew back from Hawaii to Oakland to get mepped out. And he was telling me, man, Queensrÿche's got a new album coming out here in a couple months. And I was like, well, cool, man. I bet it's, you know, because I didn't hardly listen to that second
Rage
album.
Rage for the Order. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was a lot of record company, what do you call it, influence on that album.
Well, just to change their look and everything, you know.
A lot back then, that was usually record companies that sort of more or less ordered things like that. I've heard even like Sabotage, they even made them kind of go commercial for a while, Atlantic Records. So I'm assuming, this isn't about Rage for the Order, but I think there was a lot of pressure put on them to go more glammy at that point. And obviously it didn't work, so they kind of let them go back to being themselves.
Because that demo album and the first album,
they're just pure metal albums.
It didn't sound a bit glam, you know?
No. And their look wasn't glam.
No. It was leather and chains and shit, you know?
Which they went back to for Operation Mindcrime. They kind of got rid of that whole polished look and they look like metal guys again.
Yeah, and he tried to grow his hair long again.
Yeah.
Jeff Tate did. Which he's never had really long hair.
No.
He must have a problem trying to grow it or something. I don't know.
He's bald now, so.
Oh, yeah. He was always trying to grow what sprigs he could.
My first encounter with it, I mean, I think back when I was younger, I used to buy these like heavy metal anthology, like on vinyl, get them like at, I don't know, Kmart or the Melody Shop somewhere, and it would have different songs, obviously
like a compilation album.
Yeah, so I'm assuming it was all from the same label. I think they were on EMI back then, and I remember Deliverance was the first Queensrÿche song I ever heard, and I'm like, this song is really good. And Take Hold of the Flame, I was just totally just shocked how he could sing. I mean, Jeff Tate, I'm like, this guy's better than Dio or Dickinson or anybody, you know. Then when I finally was seeing them in the magazines, I was like, well, they're a glam group, you know, all that weird outfits from Rage for the Order, just really strange shit.
All the leopard prints and all that kind of shit.
And then I remember all the keyboards and all the weird, I mean, and especially in the 80s, I wasn't really into that the keyboards and stuff as much as I am now. Again, I've really accepted that album years later, but I had no idea that Operation Mindcrime came out because they fell off my radar because I'm like, this is kind of a flash in the pan band. So much to my shock, they're opening for Metallica on the Justice Tour. And I remember telling my sister, why would Queensrÿche be opening the show? Well, there's actually a reason. They had the same management back then. So their managers got Metallica to take them on the road. And that was probably, it was one of my earlier concerts, has to be one of the greatest concerts I ever saw. Queensrÿche just absolutely fucking kicked ass on that show.
Really?
I was totally impressed.
Where was that at?
At Reunion Arena in Dallas, Texas. Wow. 1988. I guess it would be 88. It was snowing that day. We had to drive to Dallas in the snow.
That would have been the Injustice for All tour.
The Blind Justice tour. And I just couldn't believe how great Queensrÿche was. But I don't even think I realized this was the same band that, you know, I'm like, I was a kid still. I was sort of like, well, is that the same band that did Rage for Order or, you know, what happened? So I remember the very last song they played was Eyes of a Stranger.
So did you see them in concert before you actually heard the album or?
Yes. I didn't even know the album was out. I think I remember they were playing Eyes of the Stranger on MTV and I thought it was kind of a catchy tune, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. Till I heard it in the concert live. And the next day I went and bought Mindcrime and apparently I was not the only one. I think that being on tour with Metallica really opened the doors for Queensrÿche to a whole new world. Cause I don't believe that album sold well in the beginning. I think it was one of those slow builds. They actually went back about a year afterwards and did more videos for the album, building up the storyline and stuff
I think they actually did a video for each song.
Well, not in the beginning.
Yeah, not in the beginning.
It started out, I think they did Eyes of a Stranger for MTV, and then I think they may have done I Don't Believe in Love, and then they went back and recorded, if not every song, the majority of it, and put it out on VHS and called it Video.
They're all on YouTube crime. Too.
Yeah. So they blew up then. They just really blew up. What did you say that album debuted? Or not debuted, but got pretty high on the charts even.
What was it? 50, I think?
I bet that happened. I'm going to look at this up real quick because I'm curious.
Yep, 50 on the Billboard 200 for 88. Got up to 50.
Well, I think that tour with Metallica is what made their careers right there. Because it showed everybody that they were really a metal band. Now, he said he was going to get into a little bit more about Mary and her death here.
Well,
it was a mystery.
Yeah.
It was a big mystery because nobody knew who killed Mary.
Well, they did a sequel.
Well, no, they actually also did a thing on MTV. It was a Solve Who Killed Mary thing. It was like a contest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I don't think it really went anywhere. And then they came up with, before you get the sequels, they came out with this, Operation Live Crime. And supposedly that was where they revealed who killed Mary, but it just kind of flashed a little subliminal message on there.
Subliminal.
It was. It just kind of popped on the screen. It said, actually, suicide. It just popped across the screen.
Yeah.
So everybody was like, well, okay.
Well, from where I read, it says that it was in that, what's that video, other video, is the live from Moore. Didn't you say you had that video too, or is that what you're talking about there?
No, this is came way later.
Supposedly that's where they
actually solve it.
Solve it and say.
Well, this one, here's the one where they actually have actors. They actually make this into a, into like a, almost a
rock
opera. Broadway production, I guess.
Yeah, they had props and
they had I think
stage and video they screen. Had
special guest Ronnie James Dio on it and everything else.
Yep, he did one song on there.
And yeah, I think you were getting into the sequel as well.
Yeah, that was released on April 4th, 2006, and. Yeah, Dio played Dr. X on that.
Well, I know that I listened to that album about three times and found no interest in whatsoever to it and never listened to it again, to be honest.
Well, when they went on tour with it, they did the whole
first one
and the Operation Mindcrime 2.
Yes, this time they did both albums. Well, they did the first album and then that would have been a long ass concert.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that'd have to be well over 3 hours, man.
And then they did an encore.
What's the running time? What's the running time on it?
183 minutes.
Damn.
But they did an encore and did Jet City Woman,
man. Huh?
They did an encore and it said Jet City Woman was the encore.
Well, I seen him in '95. And Typo Negative opened for him. It was on.
I didn't know Typo Negative was touring with bands like them.
Yeah.
In '95,
I had never heard of them before. I listened to them, and they were awesome live, dude.
I saw them with Motley Crue with John Corabi. Typo Negative. It was Stuttering John from Howard Stern Show, his band. Maybe somebody else in Typo Negative opening for Motley. So I guess they were touring with some pretty big bands in the mid-90s.
Well, when I seen them, what tour was that? The one after Empire. I keep forgetting the name. What's the name of that album?
Promised Land.
Yeah, it was the Promised Land tour. Well, they played most of the songs off of that, then the couple of hits off the other albums. And then they did the whole Operation Mindcrime album.
I think they've done Mindcrime from start to finish multiple times, now that it's all said and done.
and they had the same thing. They had the actors and the stage set up, and he come out there in a Jeff Tate come out in a straight jacket. And
that must have been part of this Operation Live Crime bit, because this came out a few years after the fact. It came out in a box. It came with a videotape and a CD. And then finally, years later, everybody put out the DVDs.
It was just weird listening to the music, you know, and then having that shit going on stage, you know. It was just
kind of Cooper-like, it sounds like.
It was just strange to me. I'd never seen nothing like it.
Yeah, Cooper does it.
Did he cancel his show here in town? Or?
No, it's still a go.
Because he had canceled Texas Frightmare.
He did. He canceled Frightmare because of the tour.
Ah.
Everybody's still a go. Kiss is back on tour. Cooper's touring. The only thing that's not on the Kiss tour, David Lee Roth disappeared.
Yeah, wasn't Gene saying that he was trying to get a hold of him and he couldn't get a hold of him or something?
He said he just disappeared. And then Gene, being Gene, pretty much said, well, it ain't no big loss anyway. He said, you know, he used to be one of the greatest lead singers and front men in music, and now he's just basically reduced to a joke, and compared him to Fat Elvis. That kind of pissed Dave off, I think.
That's fucking cold, dude.
Paul had to come in and basically apologize for the statement and talk about how good Dave was. Dave apparently has a Twitter account and posted a picture of a middle finger and Gene's face there and said, fuck you, Gene.
Gene went and fucking made fun of Dave and got COVID, goddammit.
Well, he actually apologized and said he didn't mean it in the way it sounded. That
took it out of context.
It got took out of context. But yeah, Paul caught COVID. Gene got the COVID, but apparently neither one of them got very sick. And they're back on tour. And
well, you know, they were getting shot up with all kinds of shit.
Oh, yeah.
They were taking some Joe Rogan shit.
They're good to go. Tour's back going. My friend Dave Manley, I don't think he's a part of our group yet, but he may be soon. He was actually in the front row center, and he got all kinds of goodies.
Oh, really?
I think Gene threw his blood towel to him, and he got a bunch of pics.
Oh.
So, yeah, so the show's back going. I guess we've diverged from Queensryche at this point.
Oh, well, we're just talking shit.
Well, let's go a little bit about Queensryche here. You know, I don't know if we're going to dedicate another show to them or not, but, you know, Empire came out after Mindcrime, and
yeah.
I got Empire is a strong album. It is a great album.
Yes, it is.
It's different than Mindcrime, but it was their biggest hit by far. You know, it produced top 10 singles. And honestly, after Empire, they've never put out anything worth a shit. Honestly, not either version of Queensryche. I think you said you liked the Promised Land album. I was really disappointed in that thing. I was really disappointed in that thing.
Well, that came out. The record company must have been on their ass or something, because it came out like there was a big space in between Operation Mindcrime and Empire.
Well, that's for one reason, because
Empire came out in 91.
Yes, but Mindcrime took off like a year after its release more. Yeah. You know, it really, so it's one of those late blooming albums. So,
yeah,
then Empire was massive. And then that Promised Land came. And then Here in the Now Frontier. And that's whenever I think they tried to piggyback on the fact they were from Seattle.
I didn't like that.
They were trying to piggyback that, hey, we're a Seattle band. So that means that we must be, you know, friends with the grunge bands from Seattle. So we're going to coattail off of them. And they tried, I believe. Man,
it didn't work.
Well, it worked as far as
I didn't even buy that album.
Well, you know, I kept buying all these Queensryche albums, and I kept thinking, you know, unless they get any better, I'm just not gonna buy them anymore. And then I saw them on tour with a few bands, and they sounded good on tour, you know, in concert. They played a lot of the older stuff, and then seemed like as time went on, they quit playing the old stuff and only played new stuff. And people started asking, and Jeff Tate was like, well, you know, I'm not really into metal anymore. You know, I'm kind of into what I'm doing today, which is kind of lighter music. And that's sort of what Queensrÿche kind of became. Like I was saying before we went live, he did like a solo album, which was kind of a jazz new age album. I thought it was actually pretty good. Saw him in concert and real laid back, you know, fun atmosphere. But then when the next Queensrÿche album came out, it was back to that. I don't know. They put out so many albums. I mean, they did that one, The American Soldier.
Well, didn't they lose DeGarmo after Promised Land too?
DeGarmo left somewhere probably after Promised Land. And that's when the band, I think, sunk. That guy was the Izzy Stradlin of Queensrÿche. Yeah. You know, I always say Izzy was the brains of Guns N' Roses, which is true. Yeah. DeGarmo was the brains of Queensrÿche. I mean, Jeff may have wrote the lyrics, but that was DeGarmo's band. And once he left, it just sunk. I think he came back for one album, and it just, he didn't want to be there. Then they had guitarist after guitarist, and then, of course, the big blow-up, and then we had two Queensrÿches.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fiasco, wasn't it?
Not sort of a, you know, didn't we see the new, the current version of Queensrÿche? And
he tries too hard, man. He tries.
Well, the guy can hit the, he can hit the notes, but, you know, a lot of the old Queensrÿche fans.
He can't hold them as long, though.
Yeah, well, Jeff can't even hit them anymore, honestly. Jeff is one of the few people that will actually admit, I think, that his voice is no longer what it once was in the 80s. So he's like, I can't sing those songs, people. I'm sorry. You know, whereas you got Don Dokken and Vince Neil running around making
Vince Neil.
What the hell? Made me jump.
Vince Neil.
Now, did you hear the big mess with Vince Neil? That they had some rumor going on that they brought Karabi back and was doing secret rehearsals.
Yeah, I seen you you posted that. That's funny.
Yeah, I'm actually friends with Karabi on Facebook, and he went off on a tangent.
Yeah, he did.
Pretty much told those guys the fuck off, that he had no interest in ever going back.
Two.
Two, and then three, and finally, fuck off. I don't ever want to be a part of you guys again. John's got money. John's made some money over the years. He don't need them guys. Nor do they need themselves. They need to stay retired. They did a good final tour, and they should have left it at that.
Yeah.
I don't think this tour is ever going to happen. I don't think it'll ever happen. You know, they canceled it this year. Now it's for next year.
Maybe they can get David Lee Roth to sing for them.
Dave, yeah, maybe.
He's looking for a job.
Well, yeah, he quit the Kiss tour.
And he's not, he was a EMT there for, 5 or 6 years, I think, in New York City, man.
Yeah, then he replaced Howard Stern when Howard left and went to Sirius.
Yeah.
He actually took the Howard Stern show over, and that was a colossal fucking mess.
Yeah, it was. Because he didn't want to adhere to what they wanted. He wanted to do it his own way.
He was being a rebel. At one point, they said he did a whole hour of the show in Spanish. He just started speaking Spanish. So
he was on Joe Rogan a couple months ago, man. He's just a fucking whack job. Some of the shit he was saying.
When did he get all those sleeve tattoos? He's like all sleeved out.
I don't know.
Dave's a strange character.
He's about one nut short of a squirrel.
Well, you know, Jeff Tate gets a lot of shit for being just an asshole and a dickhead, and that he was abusive to the band, and him and his wife were stealing the money from the band. And
yeah, that's why. Isn't that why they fired him?
Well, actually, this is a good thing to get into.
She was their manager for years, wasn't
yes. she? Well, they got that Todd, whatever his name is, from Crimson Glory, the band, and they supposedly were going to make an album with him and the other, the band of Queensrÿche, and this guy, they actually had named their band. And somewhere along the line, somebody told them, well, why don't y'all just claim the Queensrÿche name? And they did. That's how we got into having two Queensrÿches. Then, of course, I guess Jeff Tate took him to court and lost. He flat lost. Which, to me, everybody knows who Jeff Tate is. I don't know that he really needed the Queensrÿche name. Everybody knows that Jeff Tate.
He sure did go out touring under his name.
Yeah, a lot.
Because he,
and, you know, he actually
turned around and did the Operation Mindcrime thing again. Solo.
Well, that's part of the lawsuit. He actually won the rights to perform Mindcrime and the name Operation Mindcrime. Whereas I guess the Queensrÿche band can perform songs from it, but they can't perform the album or promote the name. So I guess Jeff won the name Operation Mindcrime in the lawsuit. So
yeah, that went on for years. They were fighting over
it
that
did.
Shit.
They actually put out two albums with both lineups.
Huh.
And Jeff's was called Frequency Unknown, and on it it said FU. So I guess that was an FU.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that wasn't too good of an album.
Well, the one they put out wasn't all that good either.
Yeah.
And I know people who just absolutely, they will get pissed at me for talking shit about the current Queensrÿche. You don't know what you're saying. That guy can sing. I'm not saying he can't sing. I'm just saying, you know, Scott Rockenfield is now gone from the band. He went on a medical leave about 3 years ago. And they got Casey Grillo, for whatever his name is, from Camelot, which is one of my favorite bands. And Camelot asked him, well, are you coming back? He's like, no, I'm staying with Queensrÿche. Queensrÿche claimed that Scott Rockenfield is just on leave for now and he'll be back. And that's like 3 years later. So you're reduced down to a band that only has two original members at this stage.
Was the Rockenfield playing with them when we seen them at Trees?
I don't think so. No. I think that would have been the Camelot drummer, who's a great drummer. I mean, if anybody's going to replace Rockenfield, that guy would be the one. Casey, that's his name. Good guy. I actually met the Camelot guys at the Ridgely Theater years ago.
You met really everybody, cool. Man.
I've met a lot of people. I never met Jeff Tate. I've always heard Jeff Tate's a douche if you don't want to meet him. He always wears his vest, too, you know, where he goes. You ever notice that?
This is a sleeveless vest with no shirt underneath.
Yes. Yep. I don't know. At least, like I said, I respect somebody who says, I don't have the vocal ability that I had in the 80s and 90s, so I can't sing those songs anymore. But I think I saw somewhere where he's going on tour and doing the entire Empire and I think the entire Rage for Order album.
Yeah, that was supposed to come here, and it keeps getting
COVID keeps knocking it out.
Yeah, now
I'd go see that
in January or something.
Let's go to that. I want to see that because, like I said, I've kind of grown to like the Rage for Order album in my older age. You know, I'm into more keyboardy, you know, symphonic music, and I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Oh, I'm game, man.
You always want me to go to a concert. I'll go see Jeff Tate. We were supposed to go see him in Deep Ellum, and I think I backed out on you.
Yeah, that's so, when he was doing the mind crime thing.
For the 500th time?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know what the current Queensrÿche band are up to. I've sort of lost track of them.
Well, they've done like three albums with that new guy, haven't they?
Yeah, with Todd, they've done two, maybe three. I just didn't get into those albums. They sound more like Crimson Glory than they do Queensrÿche to me. That guy actually played drums on one of them. He's a drummer. That's what he started out as. I guess since Rockenfield was gone, he played drums on one. So, talented guy. It's hard for me to really, you know, and I'm very accepting of new lead singers. Video Bob always give me hell. Why do you like so-and-so? They don't have the singer. I'm like, well, it's Warrant. That's a good example. We went, me and him and Rachel and I think Beast and all went and saw, it was like 80s night. It was like Warrant and Slaughter and Firehouse and somebody. And Warrant was closing and Bob was like, well, I'm leaving. I don't want to see Warrant. Janie Lane's dead. And I'm like, no, man, they're better now than they were. So
well, yeah, that's what I heard. I always heard they sucked live with him singing.
Janie had had a lot of issues with drugs and drinking that actually messed his performances up. But Robert Mason
Hate me for bagging on Warrant.
Well, Robert Mason is their singer, has been for years. He's, you know, was singer of Lynch Mob for George Lynch for a long time, and actually has a band with Lynch and Jeff Pilson, and was Mick Brown. It's kind of like Dokken without Dokken. It was all the guys in Dokken with the singer of Lynch Mob. They put out two albums, but Bob left because he didn't want to see Warrant without Janie Lane, but I thought they put on a good show. But Queensrÿche without Jeff Tate, it's just hard for me to accept. I realize his voice is shot, but I don't know. We saw him and it was okay, but Armored Saint kicked their ass by far.
Yeah, they put on a good show, man. Boy, Bush ain't lost his voice, that's for sure.
No, John Bush is one of the greats. But that's kind of my take of 2021. I just don't really know that I can accept these guys as Queensrÿche. It's just bass player, guitar player, drummer from Camelot, the dude from Crimson Glory. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea who their other guitar players that took DeGarmo's spot. They've had about four or five of them. It's just hard for me to call that Queensrÿche. I'm sorry. People can bag on me. That's my take of...
Maybe they'll have a reunion one day.
Well, you know, everybody said when Dokken broke up, oh, they'll never have a reunion. They were the first 80s band that got back together. Believe it or not. They were the first to break up. Don cannot sing worth a flip. He was even talking about that. He was bringing it up that his voice is shot, and that he said that some nights he's good and some nights he's not. He said that a lot of it has to do with flying. You know, if they fly somewhere and then, you know, you kind of get allergies hit him, and that he just has his good nights and his bad nights. Jeff Pilson is actually a better singer than Don at this stage.
Huh.
So now Don's voice is gone, but he's actually kind of upfront about it, at least now. They're doing some shows with Lynch. I guess it's Dokken with George Lynch opening. That's
They played out there at the Lava Cantina not too long ago.
Yeah, I wasn't interested. I like George Lynch was or is one
especially
of my favorite
at that
guitar
place.
Players.
That place sort of sucks, man.
Yeah, outside.
Especially when it's fucking 20 degrees outside.
Yeah. But we'll keep our eye out for Jeff Tate coming and doing that Rage for Order / Empire thing.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear. I don't know if he can hit how he'll sound, but, you know, whatever. I mean, these guys are all getting in their 60s and shit now. I mean.
Yeah, I know. They need to start giving it up, man.
Nah, either they that
got,
or.
They ain't got the money like Gene to have the daily vitamin injections and your skin rubbed.
Gene needs a skin rub. Gene's got delicate skin there. Gene's my favorite though. I don't give a shit. I don't care what Gene and Paul say. I'll always support them. I don't give a shit. They can talk shit about whoever.
Oh, you mean Ace and Peter?
Fuck Ace and Peter, yeah. I love Ace. Ace is my favorite, but you know, dude had two chances to be in Kiss. And he don't want to be in Kiss, obviously.
Yeah, he marches to his own drummer.
I mean, if I had my preference, Eric Singer belongs in Kiss. Eric Singer belongs in Kiss more than Peter. Peter cannot perform anymore. He will admit it. He could come out and sing Beth, but it should. I wish that, you know, they had just put out an actual. I've got it right here somewhere. Maybe I'll put it up right there. They put this off the soundboard from Japan, 2001, and it actually has Eric Singer and Ace on it. So it's kind of a little bit of history right there.
Huh.
So I'm Camp Gene.
Camp Gene.
Camp Paul. Camp Eric Singer and Camp Bruce Kulick.
Yeah.
Oh, we're way off subject now.
Yeah, we are, but oh well.
Anything else about Queensryche we need to bring up?
Not that I know of, man. You got anything else?
Not really. Just I think I'm gonna throw in this Operation Live Crime and then watch that tonight. Relive the glory days when they still had DeGarmo and Jeff could still hit the notes. I think it's a better product than this Live at the Moor.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't think I could sit through the entire Queensryche Operation
3 hours.
No, Operation Mindcrime 2, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's 3 hours long.
I just think it's weird that they closed the show with Jet City Woman of all songs to pick to close Operation Mindcrime. I love that. Ain't nothing wrong with that song. I'm just saying it doesn't seem to fit Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah.
That was Radio Queensryche.
All right, everybody. I guess that's it for Queensryche Operation Mindcrime.
And et cetera.
Et cetera.
Yeah, I guess we're going to start going on rants at the end of our.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, man. We're just having fun.
Now, that's where I excel when we go off on random shit.
All right, everybody. If you like what you hear, leave us a review on iTunes and
join the group.
Join the group. Answer the questions.
Well, maybe you should give them the answers of the questions so people can join.
Okay, I'm getting ready to we gave one answer to the question at the beginning, and I'm about ready to give the other answer to the question right now.
You know, Count Karabi can't even join the group. I tried, but it wouldn't let me.
What the hell's up with that?
I guess he can't answer the questions.
Stay evil, everybody. Have a good one.